The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members. And before we do that, I would like to remind our members that the use of BlackBerries, laptops, and any other electrical devices will not be permitted during question period. So they are to remain off during that time. The honor. The time is 1:53. 12:53. We'll finish at 1:53. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Yesterday, Capitol Health issued yet again another code census. Later in the evening, the same district provided a solution. A solution that will address not only the much-celebrated flatline budget received from government, but also the frequency of code census calls. The district solution moved patients out of the transitional care unit. They claim this will have no impact on patient care. So my question for the Premier, can the Premier explain how moving patients out of a transitional care unit when they have nowhere else to go fails to have zero impact on patient care?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what I know is that the QE2 and the Capital District Health and all of the facilities in Capital Health have the utmost respect for the individuals for whom they are providing service, Mr. Speaker. I don't believe that any of them that would make a decision that they felt would in any way impact on the patient's care.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, long care was important to this government when they were in opposition. Now they are content to remain silent and letting the districts deal with the problem. As of yesterday, Mr. Speaker, 71 patients at Capitol Health were occupying hospital beds, waiting for long-term care, Mr. Speaker. These are real people with families, Mr. Speaker, waiting to hear something from government on what will happen with them. My question to the Premier. What plans does your government have for these 71 patients the district indicates they no longer have the budget resources to provide care for?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, I don't know if the Leader of the Opposition has been following this, but we have been opening new long-term care beds right across this province, hundreds of them, Mr. Speaker. And in fact, Mr. Speaker, we have already closed one transitional unit by taking those people and putting them in long-term care facilities. You can expect that that will continue.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've been following the opening of these long-term care facilities. Mr. Speaker, I was following it when the previous government initiated the solution of building long-term care facilities across this province. What we're asking from this government, instead of standing here and cutting the ribbon on a commitment made by the previous government, what is your solution facing the many Nova Scotia families who have loved ones in the long-term care, waiting for a long-term care bed, who are sitting in transitional care units across this province? This is not only a challenge here in the Capital District, Mr. Speaker, it is a challenge all across Nova Scotia. What we're looking for from the Premier, instead of cutting ribbons on previous commitments,
question.
What is your government going to do to make sure Nova Scotia families have a long-term care bed?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We are supplying more beds for long-term care. We are moving people out of transitional units into those beds, Mr. Speaker. We're not just cutting ribbons, Mr. Speaker. More important than announcements made by the former government is the fact that we are actually budgeting to support those long-term care beds. We are supporting the people who are in those beds, Mr. Speaker, and it was the single largest increase in the health care budget was in long-term care this year.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure many Nova Scotians, particularly those who work at the Halifax shipyard, were shocked to read this morning that the federal Liberal leader intends to interfere with the procurement process for work on the National Shipbuilding Procurement Strategy to give Davie Shipyard a chance to bid on this massive contract. Mr. Gnadieu's plan is one that could push the Halifax shipyard out of contention, and that smacks of political opportunism at its most crass. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. Would the government be in favour of a move to change the deadline already established, and does the Premier believe such a move would be consistent with a fair and open bidding process?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the member opposite for the question. Obviously, like many Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, I was very shocked to read the comments of the Liberal leader. I think, as is usually the case in these things, people have two opinions. They have their knee-jerk reaction to it, and then they have a considered opinion. And I would hope that the considered opinion of Mr. Ignatieff would be to support the fair and open procurement process that is currently underway. Certainly, I support it, and I would hope, and I know that my colleagues in the other provinces here support it. And I hope that he would, in considering his opinion, understand the value of the existing rules.
The Honourable Member from Hants West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, five shipyards from across the country entered in this bidding process for a $35 billion contract. Believing that the awarding of the contract would be managed through an independent process, free of political interference, and overseen by a fairness monitor. My question for you to the Premier, what would the effect of this change be on the Halifax shipyard and its chance of success?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, as I've said before, we make the best ships in the world right here in Nova Scotia. We're not afraid of competition. We're not afraid to put the skills and the product of our shipyards up against anyone. But we expect that the rules of the procurement process will be well known in advance to all of the bidders, that when they are set out by the federal government, they will adhere to that process, that it will be independent and free, frankly, of political interference. We believe, of course, the procurement process should proceed as it was set out, and we continue to support that process.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on his final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm relieved to hear that the Premier shares the outraged members of our caucus and hardworking shipbuilders feel today. My final supplementary through you to the Premier. Does the Premier intend to convey the government's strong disagreement to the Liberal leader, Mr. Ignatieff?
Honourable the Premier.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, we certainly are, and I have asked my staff to, on my instruction, to draft a letter to the leader of the Federal Liberal Party expressing our disappointment in his comments and ask him to understand that on this, but also on comments that he has made with the Lower Churchill and the idea that it should be wheeled through Quebec, that neither of these things are acceptable to the people of Nova Scotia, and furthermore, that if this were to come true, if this was to be, in fact, the position of the federal government, it runs the risk of stunting the growth of Atlantic Canada for a generation.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. Today, we are beginning to see the true impact that a flatline budget will have on the operations of Capital Health. Everything is being laid on the table, including moving nursing home patients out of the transitional care unit in the hospital when clearly they have nowhere else to go. My question to the minister is, how does the minister plan to respond to a recommendation of closing beds for the 71 elderly patients waiting for a nursing home space?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, Mr. Speaker, the first thing the Minister of Health is intending to do is to actually get the report from Capital Health. They have until, I believe, the end of the week to file their business plan with our department, and until that time, I have not seen the business plan and, in fact, have very little to say about it until I read it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, in the beginning of this session, we tabled a bill asking that that be tabled at the same time as the financial estimates. And I think it is time that we had access to that. Continue on. In November, Mr. Speaker, the Department of Health revealed that nursing homes were not operating at peak capacity. Occupancy rates on nursing home beds were down, while the number of patients in hospitals awaiting transfer was going up. The department responded at that time to the issue by bringing in an industrial engineer to streamline the way it admits seniors to nursing home beds. My question to the minister is, can the minister please indicate what was ultimately recommended by the industrial engineer to address this challenge?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there are a number of areas where patients come into the Capital District Health Authority and end up occupying beds in acute care facilities, and we need to look at how to move those folks into more appropriate settings. Seniors waiting for long-term care are one group, and we've been opening new beds and we've been assessing how we can move people in a more efficient and effective manner. For example, having people assessed on weekends, which didn't happen before, but in fact can happen, and people can be moved through at that time. We also need to look at people with mental health disorders who end up in hospital and have no place to go in terms of discharge into the community or an intermediate setting. And we also need to look at other groups in rehab, for example, people with disabilities and head injuries. And all of that work is being done in the department in a very active way in cooperation with our DHAs, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Halifax, Clayton Park, on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, my question was specifically about the industrial engineer that was hired. It was announced in November 2010 that he was being hired by the Department of Health, by the executive director of the continuing care branch for the Department of Health, and that those recommendations were going to help to streamline the placement of seniors waiting for nursing home beds who are currently in hospitals. And I believe the House has a right to see what the recommendations were and would like to know. And my final question to the minister is, will you table the results and the recommendations that came from that industrial engineer? Thank you.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when I've had an opportunity to thoroughly review the report, I will give consideration to providing it to the Honourable Member.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier, and I quote, "It's been elevated by many in the community and those outside the community as a plague that is tearing families apart, and the government response has been muted. There doesn't seem to be any clear indication from government that they are willing to provide the resources that are required in order to deal with it," end of quote. Mr. Speaker, those were the words of the NDP leader, now Premier, in an interview conducted with the Cape Breton Post in 2004, and I will table that, Mr. Speaker. He was speaking specifically about the challenges associated with prescription drug addiction. So my question to the Premier, why has the Premier chosen to be silent on the issue of prescription drug plague in 2011, when clearly it was so important to him in 2004?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, far from it, Mr. Speaker. And, you know, through our department, we are dealing with addiction services. We're putting in place the resources that are required to deal with this issue. It is, you know, something that we unfortunately have seen. You know, some communities have a very, very difficult time with, but we are working hard with our partners in the district health authorities and through the department to address it. Yeah.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, prescription drug addiction continues to plague the Annapolis Valley and many communities across this province. Mr. Speaker, these addictions are tearing families apart and they're resulting in needless deaths. So my question and follow-up to the Premier's response to the previous question, could he tell this House and all members of this House a specific issue that they have done to deal with the challenge facing these Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Of course, the person best able to answer that is the Minister of Health and Wellness. I'll ask her to respond to the Leader of the Opposition.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, and it's a very important question, one we're very concerned about, Mr. Speaker. A specific example of things that we have done, we've struck a working group. We did that some time ago to look at the whole issue of opiate abuse. We're working with the College of Physicians and Surgeons to improve the clinical guidelines that physicians use in prescribing. We have in place a drug monitoring program. We're looking at why these drugs are getting into the hands of people in the first place. And we continue to work with law enforcement groups as well, because they're often on the front lines and they understand and see before anyone else. And additionally, we've been working with the coroner, who unfortunately is often called to the scene when there's been a tragic situation as a result of drug abuse.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Speaker, this issue was important enough for the Premier to talk about in 2004. Now we are almost 2 years into his mandate as Premier, and what we heard from the Minister of Health is that we've created more strategies, more task force to talk about the issue. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia families are suffering. Nova Scotia families are losing their loved ones because of this issue. But I want to speak directly to the Premier. How much longer do Nova Scotians have to wait for you to take action on this important issue?
The Honourable the Premier. Order, please. Order, please. The member is using the word "your" again. You know, that is out of order. I explained last week that we're going to follow proper parliamentary procedure in this House. Questions are to be asked using the third person, okay? I had a procedural note distributed last week to all House leaders for each caucus explaining why this is to be followed. So I asked the member, you know, to rephrase that question and any other questions that he may ask later. The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I apologize to the host, and I appreciate receiving that note from you. So my question to the Premier, how much longer will Nova Scotians have to wait for the government of Nova Scotia to respond to these needs?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, he heard you, he got the note, he read it, he just didn't understand it, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the answer is quite straightforward. Nova Scotia families are not waiting for this government to act. This government is acting. And, Mr. Speaker, it's our intention to continue not just to talk about this, but to, in fact, implement the strategic directions that will help these families address the issues with prescription drug abuse. Thank you.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal. Mr. Speaker, over the last few months, there's been a lot of debate about the government acquiring its own road paving and chip sealing ability. In presentations to a variety of sources, of public sources, including opposition caucuses, the Minister's department referred to their success in line painting as an example of what they would like to do for paving and chip sealing more generally. As it turns out, Mr. Speaker, it's not as simple as that. That in fact, over the past 2 years, the government line paving crew has gone out of its way to undercut legitimate small business private sector operators in the line paving business. I will give, as a specific example, the contract with Parks Canada for Cape Breton Highlands National Park. My question, therefore, to the minister is this. Why is his department seeking to replace legitimate private operators such as those that provide that service to Parks Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question, although I'd appreciate the fact using the term undercutting would be, in my view, not a proper way to describe competitive bidding. It would seem to me this is an issue that, at this stage, Mr. Speaker, I'm not fully aware of. The specifics, of course, of that very important part of the trail, and of course the National Park and its involvement. It's as part of the ongoing inventory, my department regularly looks at the fact of what line painting is going to take place at what time. But at this stage, I am not aware of any undercutting that has taken place. I do know that there is a private company that is in the line painting business, as is there also, and has been for a number of years, a line painting crew from the Department of Transportation. But with those particular points that the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party has brought forward, I'll have to look at them and investigate fuller and get back to him at a later time.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I encourage the Minister to look into it, and I appreciate that he's going to take the time to do that. Let me just fill him in very briefly. In this particular case, in fact, there was no competitive bid. This is an arrangement between Parks Canada and his department. Unfortunately, the result of that arrangement was that a legitimate small business in Nova Scotia has been cut out of that work. And that's why I use the phrase undercutting, because no competitive bid was sought. They were just dropped as a result of the arrangement between his department and between Parks Canada. And so my question is this, through you, Mr. Speaker, how can private operators like those in the line painting business compete when there is no competitive process and when the Minister's department deals directly with legitimate customers like Parks Canada?
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question. Mr. Speaker, I'm not aware of any quote-unquote arrangement between the National Park and the line painting crew with the TIR. It is, after all, important that we understand the fact, whether we're talking about the road builders in this province or a private line painting company, that competition is welcomed, and that under these particular circumstances, as I've said earlier to the leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, I'll have to look at the issue and I have to discuss it with him further. It would seem to me that this is a particular example of some cherry picking, if that's appropriate. If this would be an issue that the MLA from Inverness had brought to my attention, he would have done it in the way that I would have had the answers for him in this House. I find it unfortunate that at this particular time I'm discussing something that, as the Minister, I'm not aware of any arrangement, and I'm certainly not aware of any undercutting.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We try very hard on this side of the House when we're asking a question to provide examples so that the Minister can go and check. That hardly is cherry picking. In fact, it's supporting the premise of the question. To that end, I just want to provide the Minister with a little more information. Fact of the matter is, Parks Canada billed his department $47,000 for line painting work in 2010, in the summer of 2010. Best estimates of industry is that the cost to provide that work would be in the range of $63,000 to $75,000 a year, in excess of what they were actually billed. That is why there is a concern, Mr. Speaker, about undercutting private business. And so, to bring it back to the issue of road paving, I'm wondering what assurance the Minister can give to our private road paving contractors and chip sealers that the same thing won't happen to them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Minister of Transportation and Infrastructure Renewal.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you to the member opposite. The question is in the matter of line painting, and I'd like to continue with that thought. I hear some numbers that have been expressed. It's important that I realize that some of the specifics with last year's budget and the $47,000 that was awarded to the line painting crew from the Department of Transportation. It's an important feature. I was not aware of the $63,000 to $75,000. All good information, all important things. As the Minister of Transportation, I would like to know more about, and I assure the member opposite I will find more about the situation.
Thank you. The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. 15 months ago, Kentville's Chief of Police sent a letter to the Ministers of Health and Wellness, Justice and Community Services. The letter was born of frustration at watching young people in his community lose their lives as a result of prescription drug addiction. He speaks of the unspoken pandemic sweeping Nova Scotia and the need for everyone, especially government, to be responsible,
showed a compassion and courage required to hold everyone accountable when it comes to creating the change necessary to save communities. And I'll table that letter for the House. It's one that perhaps all MLAs should read. My question to the Minister, can the Minister, before the end of question period today, please table her response to the letter signed by Chief of Police Mark Mander, dated January 15, 2009.
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I do remember receiving that letter very well. I remember having a discussion with my deputy about it, and I remember making a request that a response from our department be constructed, and a working group was established in response to the Chief of Police's letter to me. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from Kings West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, 12 young adults have died in the Valley since 2010. Street-level access to prescription drugs is a huge problem, not just in my community, but in others as well. Chief Mander expressed concerns that the prescription drug monitoring program is a reactive system, helping some, but not proactive. System responds and addresses complaints only when reported. It's incapable of flagging problem prescribers from the outset. Tragic results of reactive monitoring systems, Mr. Speaker, more deaths. My question to the Minister. Given the Minister was made aware of the prescription drug monitoring system problem a year and a half ago, can the Minister report to the House what she has done to address it?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, as I indicated earlier, there are a number of things that we're doing. We did struck the working group, and the working group did have representation from mental health, from the coroner's office, from the physician, from the colleges of physicians and pharmacists. We do have the prescription monitoring program. I met with the college myself personally about the prescription monitoring program and how that program is actually working and what are the things that we might do to improve upon the program. We're also working with the College of Physicians and Surgeons in terms of developing and implementing better clinical practice guidelines for physicians who prescribe in the province these very powerful drugs. And additionally, we are working on the whole aspect of treatment for people who become addicted to these very powerful drugs and the need for better treatment programs. So there are two elements we need to deal with: the access to these powerful drugs and then treatment for people who should become addicted to them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I appreciate that the Minister is taking the issue very, very serious. I know it's complex, but in some ways the problem is now, it's urgent, and it's not at all, it's not fully a comforting response for the families who have buried their loved ones as a result of a prescription drug overdose. The challenge exists now, today. Mr. Speaker, we have seen this government take action on the issue of cyberbullying, but when it comes to prescription drugs, not so much. My question to the Minister, why has the Minister not dealt with this in a more urgent fashion to bring her colleagues together to address an issue that is literally breaking the hearts of families from one end of the province to the other?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Well, I don't know what miracles that minister or that member thinks can be performed with respect to such a difficult subject as this. And I want to say, as someone who worked for many years as a social worker and who has lost to this tragic, tragic situation. Young people that I worked with as a social worker, I take this matter extraordinarily seriously, which is why we are doing the things we're doing, which is why we're working with the coroner's office, which is why we're working with the College of Physicians and Surgeons, which is why we're looking at prescribing patterns, which is why we're looking at the need for better treatment. And Mr. Speaker, I take great exception to that member standing there and saying that this Minister of Health does not treat this matter seriously.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and obviously she missed my opening remarks where I said she took the problem serious. However, there is an urgent need today. People will leave detox in the Middleton Hospital today without follow-up, without support, and without the kind of help they need. My question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. So, Speaker, today joining us in the gallery is Amy Graves. In the last month, she has lost her brother, a victim of the drug Dilaudid in combination with alcohol. She is not alone in her loss. She has participated in protests to ensure other families not have to suffer the loss that she has endured. Amy's brother Josh, 21, was bright, he had a job, he had a car, he was beginning to plan his future. Amy is not about criticizing the system. She simply wants help for others when it comes to excess prescription drugs on the street. My question to the minister: what are you going to do in the short term to help families like Amy's and others crying out for help?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much. And first of all, I'd like to extend my condolences to the lady that the member referred to. Mr. Speaker, prescription drugs are way too easy to find. And that is one of the things that we are taking action on. We need to ensure that prescription drugs, particularly the powerful opiates, are much more difficult to access. And Mr. Speaker, for people who become addicted to prescription drugs, we need to ensure that they have ready access to treatment. And those are the two-pronged approaches that we are actively pursuing in the Department of Health.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Amy Graves simply wants to make a difference for families struggling with the same challenges. Since Christmas, in addition to Amy's brother, Josh, two other deaths have hit me personally. One young man I taught, while the other I served as his vice principal. One had medical detoxification 7 times, but was never able to access a regulated methadone program. The western part of the Annapolis Valley is in desperate need of a provincially run methadone clinic. Families were screaming for help months, weeks, and even hours before the deaths of these two young men who were my students. My question to the minister: Amy and many families want timely access for treatment and a methadone clinic before the medical examiner has to handle yet another statistic. Will the minister assist in this urgent need?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I know firsthand of the positive impact that access to methadone can have for residents of our province. Direction 180 and is in my constituency and was the first methadone clinic in the province, and I've always been very supportive of that particular clinic. It's not the only way to deliver methadone. As we know, it can also be delivered through the offices of family physicians, and I believe that pharmacists are doing it in parts of the province as well. And we are very much involved in looking at what the needs of the Annapolis Valley area are and how to deliver a very strong program for people who do have opiate addictions in that particular area. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my community and several others throughout the Valley will not let this issue falter until solutions are found and implemented. This has been a very difficult day for Amy to come here and for her family, but it is the role of all legislators to join her in creating a better outcome through education, timely treatment programs, 24-hour access to follow-up needs, which includes a provincially run methadone clinic. My question to the minister, and this is a recommendation of Chief Mander, who is more than prepared to assist, but will you immediately bring medical, pharmaceutical, law enforcement, community leaders to the table at the same time to bring action to this prescription drug problem and to help on the front line?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the answer to that question, of course, is yes, but we already are actively working in this area, Mr. Speaker, and we will continue to do so, and we recognize very much. And I would like to take an opportunity to thank the families and the individuals from the Annapolis Valley who have been organizing some public events for the attention that they're bringing to a very important issue. Their work will not go unnoticed, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you will be to the Minister of Health and Wellness. Mr. Speaker, last fall, the NDP government in Manitoba committed $500,000 to fund clinical trials into the liberation therapy for MS as a part of a national effort. It said recently that it is tired of waiting for a broad coordinated Canadian research effort to begin, so it announced $5 million for clinical trials. Unfortunately, the Nova Scotia government has made a priority to spend up to $5 million a year for 5 years to introduce an optional Playlate MyPlay card system on VLTs with no proof that it will deter problem gamblers. Yet still, no commitment for liberation therapy. No commitment for the thousands of Nova Scotians who suffer with MS. No commitment to improve their quality of life. Manitoba is taking a lead on liberation therapy and would have liked all provinces to participate in trials, but in the absence of that, Premier Selinger said, this is a strong plan B. My question to the minister is this. Since there is no national effort to fund trials into the liberation therapy, what is this government's plan B?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much. Well, first of all, there actually is a national effort. And it was agreed to by all ministers of health, including the Minister of Health from Saskatchewan, from Manitoba, and myself, when we met in Newfoundland a year ago, the fall past. And Mr. Speaker, what that initiative is about is seven research projects throughout North America, four of them in Canada, which will be monitored very closely by a national scientific expert panel. And the results of this research, which we health ministers asked that it be accelerated, results as quickly as possible, that will form the basis of clinical trials going forward. And we've said as a province, we certainly will participate in clinical trials when the scientific panel recommends that clinical trials proceed.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, Manitoba is going to work jointly with Saskatchewan to avoid duplication of research into the liberation therapy, and they hope that other provinces will join them. My question to the Minister is this. Have you had any discussions with the governments of Manitoba or Saskatchewan to see how Nova Scotia could benefit from working together with them on research into liberation therapy for MS patients?
Order, please. Again, we're using the word you. You know, I'm not going to read the same speech over again, but I'd remind all members, please, that, you know, please ask the questions using the third person when asking questions. So I will now let the Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness answer the question.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, through you to the Honourable Member, I'd like to say that the Premier was just in Manitoba last weekend and spoke with the Premier of Manitoba. I've had an opportunity to speak with the Health Minister from Manitoba. And Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia is currently the chair of the Federal Provincial Territorial Health Minister's table. And I have an opportunity every time we consult across the country to get an update. And I assure the Honourable Member, Mr. Speaker, that MS Liberation Therapy is on the agenda of every conversation and every meeting we attend. We attach great importance to this subject, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for providing that guidance of my questioning earlier. Mr. Speaker, the Manitoba branch of the MS Society of Canada applauded Premier Selinger's announcement, saying that they were pleased that MS has been recognized as a top priority healthcare issue by the NDP government of that province. My question through you to the Minister of Health and Wellness is, why is this government following the lead of its Manitoba NDP cousins on paving? But when it comes to liberation therapy trials, and given the high prevalence of MS in Nova Scotia, when will this NDP government make MS a top priority health care issue and begin funding trials into liberation therapy to improve the quality of life for thousands of Nova Scotians who suffer with MS?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, people who suffer from MS in Nova Scotia are, in fact, a very important priority for this government. This government funds the MS clinic here. Mr. Speaker, I have had an opportunity to go and meet with the members of the MS community here in Metro, and we keep the lines of communication open. We will continue to work with that community, and we are fully prepared to participate in clinical trials once the scientific evidence supports that participation, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, last week in question period, when asked about the finances around the decision to cut investment in the Yarmouth to New England ferry, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism said, and I quote, "We were the only game in town. I wrote to the U.S. government, to the federal government. To the best of my knowledge, there was only one game in town, and that was the provincial government." I'm just wondering, Mr. Speaker, if the minister can answer this question. Was the decision to cut the ferry for 2010 based on the fact that the financial burden was falling solely on the province's shoulders? And I'll table those comments.
Thank you. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, through you to the member opposite, the decision to cut the ferry, and again, this is a reiteration that the Bay Ferries wanted us to continue with the subsidy of the ferry service. We made a decision, we meaning cabinet, made a decision based on the business case that was in front of us, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, without a doubt, yes, were we in contact, and did we contact other jurisdictions that we thought might be interested? Absolutely, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, when, again, I've said time and time again, it was a tough decision, it was based on a business case.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I asked if the decision to cut the ferry was based on the financial burden falling solely on the province. When I brought up a offer that was put forward by the municipalities last week, the minister said, I would also say that this funding coming from municipalities, I don't know where that's at because I've never heard of it. That's interesting, Mr. Speaker, because I have a letter here dated March 9, 2010, addressed to the Mayor of Yarmouth, the Wardens of Argyle, Yarmouth, and Clare, that states, I appreciate the municipal offer to provide financial support for the 2010 Cat Ferry service. Unfortunately, we believe it is now necessary to engage in substantive discussion on how to best proceed without the Cat. Signed sincerely, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development. Will the Minister admit to this House today that the financial situation in its entirety was not considered when they made the decision to cut funding to the Cat Ferry?
The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we had never received a proposal with figures in it concerning the subsidy. Mr. Speaker, we can be here for weeks going back and forth. He said, they said, we said. Mr. Speaker, the bottom line is a decision was made based on the business case. Decision that was made by Cabinet, and we thought long and hard about it, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your final supplementary.
Here, it's disappointing that the Minister resorts to rhetoric instead of the facts. Because if you look at the facts, it's now clear the financial situation wasn't totally considered by the province. They didn't consider the economic implications of that decision. And my question to the minister is, all we want him to do is admit that they made a mistake and help our community move forward with getting a ferry service. So my question to the minister is, will he admit that they made a mistake, that they didn't consider all the facts and they made a decision, and work immediately to address this issue and help Yarmouth secure a ferry service for 2012?
Nice question. The Honourable Minister of Economic and Rural Development and Tourism.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, all the facts were considered. And Mr. Speaker, we've proven in the last 20, 21 months that we are willing to work with Southwest Nova to improve Southwest Nova Scotia, the business, tourism in that jurisdiction, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we will stand on our record when it comes to investment in Southwest Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, Southwest Nova Scotia has to be a destination point. And I was criticized, Mr. Speaker, for saying let's concentrate on the positives. Mr. Speaker, Southwest Nova Scotia has a lot to offer. Let's put that out there.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It has come to my attention that in an annual filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, Triangle Petroleum has noted that Nova Scotia demands an exceptionally low royalty rate for gas production compared to other provinces and, in fact, other U.S. states, and, in fact, offers other incentives on top of that. In fact, the royalty rate that Nova Scotia has asked for onshore gas is 10%, compared to an average rate of over 17.5% and up to 36% in Alberta. And in Texas and Louisiana, 25% to 30%, and in New York, the legislated minimum royalty rate of 13%. In fact, Nova Scotia has, if not the lowest royalty rate, one of the lowest in North America. Even worse, Mr. Speaker, in Nova Scotia, the royalty rate, unlike other jurisdictions, is calculated after processing and production costs instead of on gross production. So, Mr. Speaker, would the Minister of Energy please explain to Nova Scotians why he believes residents of Nova Scotia deserve to benefit less from their resources than the citizens of other provinces?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for the question. You know, our royalty rates have been in effect for some time, probably for years, for decades now. But we are undertaking a review within the department to look at our rates, you know, for minerals, for petroleum resources, for aggregates, for everything. So that review is underway. But certainly at the moment, you might say we're very competitive.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, see, 10% royalty. Mr. Speaker, a 10% royalty rate is not competitive, it's theft. Mr. Speaker, the minister recently stated in the House, and I quote, the oil and gas industry is an important part of our energy future. But he forgot to mention that his government, the NDP government, believes that not only should the gas industry walk away with our resources at a lower price than anywhere else, but that they deserve a 2-year royalty holiday when the wells start. The same SEC report, and I'll table that report, states that for oil and gas production, no royalty shall be due for the first 2 years of production. So, Mr. Speaker, would the minister please explain why he and the NDP believe that gas exploration companies should have to pay no royalties for a resource that belongs to Nova Scotians for 2 years, in addition to the already very low royalty rate?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as I mentioned already, our royalty rates are under review, and we'll soon have that report. But you know, we're always looking for new sources of revenue and to make life better for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth Heath on your final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the NDP certainly made life better for some people with million-dollar salaries in the oil and gas companies, but I don't know about local residents of Nova Scotia. You know, Mr. Speaker, in the last 20 months, the NDP has made life less affordable for Nova Scotia by hiking user fees, raising the HST, adding a tax to electricity, and while sticking it to everyday Nova Scotian families, we now find that the NDP has followed the path laid down by the previous Conservative government by continuing a corporate giveaway to the gas industry. So, Mr. Speaker, why is this minister and the NDP government supporting increased taxes and fees for Nova Scotia families while engaging in an enormous corporate giveaway?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I said, our royalty structure is under full review, and we'll be getting that report shortly. And we're working hard to make life better for Nova Scotians, and there are better days ahead. And we'll be doing things like reducing the HST on energy and other good programs for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, this NDP government announced a debt cap for Nova Scotia students who attend Nova Scotia universities. But also it's going to use Nova Scotia taxpayers' dollars to forgive debt of Nova Scotians who are educated in institutions in other provinces with no plan to bring those students back. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister is, why is this government cutting funding to Nova Scotia universities but yet investing Nova Scotia taxpayers' dollars in universities in other provinces and countries, and what's being done to bring these students back?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think most Nova Scotian families would be very pleased to understand that the Nova Scotia government is supporting their students, whether they've been able to get their programs here in Nova Scotia or in other institutions across Canada. And certainly, I think our track record in encouraging young people to return home, to raise their families, to start businesses, and to live here and be fully engaged in Nova Scotian communities, this track record is well known, and we'll continue to encourage them to come back after their studies. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your first supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. My question is going to be a direct one to the Minister then. In order to be eligible for the program, do students have to complete the undergraduate program in a certain amount of time? And is the student debt forgiveness program tied to a retention program? So I guess it's two questions in one, Mr. Speaker.
Boner Features Day. The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on the broader issue, we're really pleased to be able to support Nova Scotian students. We have the graduate retention rebate. that more and more people are taking advantage of. This encourages people to stay in our province, whether they've graduated from community college or from university. We also have a number of other incentives to encourage people to move back to our province. So I'd be very pleased to sit down with the member at any time and go over the details of some of this. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My final supplementary to the Minister. Upon graduation, many students are faced with the challenges of finding meaningful work. And the Minister has referenced incentives that are available now. I guess my question would be to the Minister as Minister of Labour, is what will be done to encourage businesses to hire new graduates in Nova Scotia?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. More and more sectors of our business community are realizing that the challenge for them is to be going to is to fill the skilled jobs that whose openings are coming up because of retirements and big project demands from other parts of Canada. And so more and more employers and their sectors, industry sectors, are working with government to develop strategies to both upskill their current workforce, incentives to encourage Nova Scotians from other parts of who are working in other parts of Canada to return home. It's very promising in terms of a number of the projects that are going to be happening in Nova Scotia. We have a number of job openings, and we're going to make sure that we have trained, skilled workforce to fill those job openings. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, recently CBC News reported that NSCC is being forced to consider a tuition hike because of rising costs. A tuition hike would affect approximately 28,000 students who attend NSCC campuses across the province. My question, has the Minister of Advanced Education and Labour received any communication from NSCC regarding tuition increases?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly, I am aware, my department is aware, that the Board of Governors and officials at the Nova Scotia Community College are in the final stages of a very careful analysis of both their long-term plans and their budget. They fully understand that they're part of the government's initiative to live within our means, and they also recognize the significance that government places on the community college's mandate to meet both labor needs and the economic needs of this province. So we are expecting to get details about their recommendations in terms of budget decisions within the near future, and we government will be prepared to look at those very seriously. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford, Birch Cove, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask the Minister to table those communications between NSCC and the Department so we can know what they are. Mr. Speaker, NSCC is facing a $5.7 million shortfall due to rising costs. As reported on CBC, Michelle Lang, NSCC Vice President of Advancement, said that money accounts for wage increases and cost of living increases. The NDP indicated negotiated the college teachers' contract, but they won't provide additional funding to cover those increases. Can the Minister please tell this House how much the wage increases and other benefit increases the NDP negotiated will cost NSCC this year?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I don't have those details. Certainly, I'd be prepared to present that information during budget estimates. But I do know that the procedure is that once their recommendations are in place, the Board of Governors and senior officials will bring those to government, especially around, for example, any possibility of tuition increase. And I know that the government is very committed to keeping community college tuition as affordable as university tuition, and certainly we would not be in a position or would not want to grant any increases beyond the 3% cap that we also provided to protect tuition for university students. But those discussions are underway. I do not have any official correspondence at this time, but certainly would be prepared to share what details I have by the time budget estimates are held. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the NDP have saddled NSCC with additional costs and won't make up the difference. And Mr. Speaker, that amounts to a cut. Mr. Speaker, I'm wondering, why is the minister refusing to cover wage increases her government agreed to?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
I can only repeat what I said in an earlier answer, that the community college officials and Board of Governors certainly recognize that their role in terms of training the future workforce of Nova Scotia is an important one. It's one that the government takes very, very seriously, but they recognize too that they are part of the initiative to live within our means, and we all want to be responsible to the taxpayers of this province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of the Environment. Mr. Speaker, the other day our finance critic asked for detailed input costs regard to environmental assessments, and the only quote from the finance minister was, every notice has been filed. Well, Mr. Speaker, that did not answer the question. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of the Environment commit today to the House to table the exact cost and every cost that went up to deliver an environmental assessment which resulted in the fee increase?
The Honourable Member, Minister of the Environment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
Order, please. The time allotted for oral question periods by member has ended.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the Legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.